The next presentation is promoting healthy nutrition practices and physical activity among African American families with young children, a national initiative. Perlene M. Tyson. And I'm sorry, Natia, right?
Natai,
right? Okay, we're all pretty much together now. Okay, so hi everyone, I'm Perlene Tyson. I'm from the National Black Child Development Institute. I don't know how many of you guys are aware of the National Black Child Institute. How many people? Raise your hand. Oh, yay, this is the thing. Okay. So the National Black Child Development Institute has actually been around for over 41 years. We've been working with black children and their families, doing on the ground work, policy work, and as you can see now, we're going more into health work. So I'm just going to give you kind of an overview. I know you guys have been sitting for a very long time, and you guys probably have some questions, so I'm going to try to go as fast as I possibly can. So what happened was we were approached by the Walmart Foundation last year to take on doing more health initiative work in our affiliate cities. We have over 27 affiliates throughout the country. We run educational programs, we run parent empowerment programs, literacy programs, we do a lot of training. We used to actually have a magazine called The Advocate. I don't know if you guys have been aware of that, but we put out tons of different publications and we do a lot of training, but it was this new thing where we're like, oh, how are we stepping into that? Because we have the first Let's Move, but everybody and their mama want to do Let's Move now. So they ended up coming to approach us, and so we got granted through Walmart. And so they brought me in, and I've actually been running programs in Baltimore City around nutrition and health and doing some parent engagement. So the first thing that we always think about in our approach to anything is cultural competence. So we came to Walmart. We said, we would love to run programs in your cities, but we've got to make sure that whatever programs we put in the city is appropriate for the people who live in those cities. So the one thing we looked at was curriculum. So we said we looked at different curriculums and we decided that we would enhance those curriculums. And we would enhance them by making sure that they were, one, culturally competent or culturally relevant for the audience that it was supposed to serve. And for two, that it engaged families. And that's really important that I knew that I came from a background where engaging families was just as important as engaging the children and making sure that the children love the curriculum also. So we set out the whole first year of really engaging families, enhancing curriculum, and then piloting that curriculum in three of our affiliate cities. One was Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Greensboro, North Carolina, and they all had different results. That was very interesting. So these are some of, and actually this presentation is kind of in a combination of what Natai writes. I mean, you'll hear me talk about her curriculum because her curriculum was one of the curriculums that we were able to enhance last year. So we wanted to facilitate a discussion on the successes and some of the challenges that I had last year, really of trying to implement curriculum and engaging families in low-income areas. And we, I also want to share some materials on some of the stuff that we were able to mend, what worked, what didn't work. So. And because we're the National Black Child Development Institute, the focus is on black families and black children, but it is relevant for all people of color, anybody. And these are some of the strategies. I'm going to go really fast. So these are some of the things you should be able to do by the time I'm done and the tie is done. And you know, what I really want to set out to do is really try to have people who are working in these communities to reach out to parents and children and supply these families with culturally relevant materials, because it's one thing for us just to throw materials at people and say, you need to be healthy, is something wrong with you? And that's the first thing they feel when you talk to them and tell them that they're not living a healthy life and that the food that they're serving their children isn't appropriate. And so that's the one thing, and that's a barrier that I had to break down for myself. And I always tell the people about my mom, who I just, every year I go home for Thanksgiving and she's like fat back and like 50 sticks of butter on everything, and I try to go out and get the healthy version of it. And she was so angry at me one year because the grocery stores were closed and I got all the non-fat healthy versions, and she thought I ruined Christmas. And she was like, "You ruined Christmas." I was like, "How I ruined Christmas? I just got the healthy version of it because all the stores at this point are closed." And she cooked the food, used the same ingredients, and it tasted the same. So I tell people, so I always use that story. And I'm telling you, this is a woman who will eat chitlins and greens at 9 o'clock at night. So, and she's a nurse too, and that's what makes it so sad. She's a nurse. So. I call her moderation, but she doesn't listen sometimes. And she's a diabetic, so that makes it worse. So it just gets worse. It gets worse. So the one thing was that we talked to our families about was choosing the best nutritional education in the curriculums and how are we going to reach these families. And so one thing I had to do was take a critical look at nutrition education in communities of color. I have been running nutrition education and environmental education programs in Baltimore City for the last several years. But then the one thing is, Baltimore is still different than D.C. D.C. is still different than Milwaukee. Milwaukee is still different than Greensboro. So all these cities were completely different. And I had to figure out, how can I run this national initiative and not do a blanket approach and do a more specific approach? And so one thing is, and I'm a community organizer at heart. Before I did anything, I was organizing communities. And so I work with the people on the ground, and we develop partnerships with all the people in those communities so that we can make the curriculum work, so we can engage families. And that was more important to me than anything, is that we were effective and that the program, it wasn't a lazy program, that people actually planned and that people really engaged the parents and made the parents feel welcomed when they did come to our events. And so the one thing I did, I looked at how do different genres of curricula affect communities, because sometimes people just want to use garden curriculum, some people just want to use physical activity, some people just want to use a health and nutrition curriculum, and sometimes you got to use a combination, sometimes you got to use one, so you got to figure out what works for yours. And then so I looked at what worked and what didn't work, and I've seen that a lot in Baltimore, what worked and what didn't work. How can we be the most effective in preventing obesity in our communities? And I really had to go with the parents with that. And we didn't find that out to the end. You can have a room full of brains and still not come up with an answer sometimes. And so sometimes you got to have the people on the ground to really work with you to figure out how can you be the most preventive at it. So should a curriculum be culturally competent? That was the first question. When they asked me to enrich curriculum, I'm like, what do you mean I need to make it culturally competent? Isn't it already culturally competent? It's for kids. And so when you read through a lot of this curriculum that is out there, some of the language can be offensive. And some of the way that even how a teacher would even teach the curriculum in the class can be offensive. Doesn't mean that she's trying to be. Doesn't mean that the creator of the curriculum was trying to be. But we, a lot of times, we don't take into consideration who is the audience that we're trying to approach. What's their background? What's their culture? What's their religion? And what type of approaches can we take to ensure that we're not offending them and that we are truly educating them and that they are part of the educational process. And that's one thing. I used to be a teacher too in Baltimore. So that's one thing, is that the kids had to be a part of the process and the parents had to be a part of the process, which was very difficult where I taught it. So the one thing that we did last year is we enhanced these two curriculums. And Natai will talk about My Little World more than I will. She was a big hit at the NBCDI conference this year with her presentation. And My Little World, which she'll say was used all around here in D.C. and was very successful and is evidence-based, is great curriculum. I thought, wow, we should use this curriculum in more cities. More people need to know about this curriculum. And it was, and hers was a little different because her curriculum was already the cultural version of I Am Moving, I Am Learning, which I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with that curriculum, is actually being implemented implemented all throughout the country in Head Start and child care centers, but I've actually been through the training myself and been trained. There are some issues with the curriculum that I personally found with it and how it relates to kids of color, the music, and some of the language. And so it's a blessing that Natai was able to create such a great musical accompaniment and a different version that could relate to all kids of color. And so our second partnership was with Donna Richardson Joyner. I don't know if you guys know her. You might know Tom Joyner. That's her husband. And so Donna Richardson Joyner had this whole elaborate plan where she partnered with Bennett College in North Carolina, and she had this idea that college kids would, you know, teach gardening and nutrition and physical education in elementary schools. But she didn't really have her curriculum down, and it was pretty much an outline. It wasn't written down. It wasn't any lessons involved. And so what we did was we spent last year developing a full curriculum for her, modules, pre and post test. I'm a big pre and post test person. I want to know what the kid learned. And so we did a lot of that. So we spent last year really just developing that curriculum and piloting her curriculum. So those were the two curriculums we used. For what we did for Natai, we used My Little World in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Next Door Foundation Educare Center, and it was used with over 400 children. For Grow, Green, Get Fit, we were able to develop, our affiliates were able to develop partnerships with the YMCA. So we partnered with the YMCA Hayes Taylor Foundation in Hayes Taylor Y in North Carolina, and we partnered with the Christian Street YMCA in Philadelphia. And so the curriculum was used with over, 300 students total for that one. And so the one thing that we figured out, and I had this great advisory committee, and Dr. Susan Randolph was on this advisory committee along with Dr. Wendy Johnson Askew, who received the award on Sunday. Yay. And Dr. Jeanette Benacourt from Sesame Street. We had Policy Link. We had Robin Bricado. We had the CDC on board. And what we decided to do was create a tool called the Cultural Competency Improvement Tool. So how do we know if something is culturally competent? That was the first question that I actually got from Dr. Wendy Johnson asked you, how can we figure it out? So we all work together to try to develop this tool so that we can look at curriculums ourselves and measure the cultural competency or relevancy of that curriculum. So we spent last year actually developing a full tool for this. And so these are some of the things that we came up with of how something was and how culturally competent a curriculum could be and what would our learners feel after they receive the curriculum. So they should feel valued, comfortable, confident, able to share their thoughts. And let me say, they should feel that about all curriculum, not just health and nutrition curriculum. So those are some of the things that we looked at. And we have a full-blown tool, and I couldn't put it up on this PowerPoint. So another part of what we did, and as I said, was parent engagement. And so it was very, very important that if we were going to educate the kids, that we were going to also work with the parents. So another piece of it was that Natai and I went out to all these affiliate cities and helped them plan their own parent engagement events or parent education events. And so each affiliate had to have at least two parent education events. And at these parent education events, parents could be able to talk about some of the challenges that they face at home, some of the economic challenges. They could talk about food deserts, because all the parents I work with are low income. And when I say low income, most of them make $25,000 and less. So a lot of our families were very low income. And so they had, you know, a lot of times McDonald's is our family saviors. And a lot of the times the parents work two or three jobs. That doesn't make the parent a bad parent because they bought their child McDonald's. It just made the parent a challenging parent, because we had to work with them to figure out ways, what are some other ways that you could feed your child without going to McDonald's. So we brought in chefs to do 30-minute meals and do these meals on a budget. So if I only have $25, what can I get from a grocery store or using an EBT card? Because one thing we had, most of our parents received EBT cards. So, you know, based off of that, like, how much money did you have in a month? So you can buy, a lot of times I give people the example of the parent I always see in the grocery store with two shopping carts full of junk. Like, it's typically, and then they get you too. Like, they really do, because I want those Reese's pieces up in front too. But they have a ton. So you'll look at a parent, and most of the time, it is a parent who is low income, and they'll have all this junk, like sugary cereals, a ton of different stuff. It'll be two cartfuls. But those, and then most of the time, it's not even canned goods. You're in good luck if you can find canned goods, but it's like a lot of frozen dinners, a lot of that stuff, and they're pushing like two of these shopping carts. You're thinking, hey, those are enough groceries to last them for 2 months. Most of the time, those groceries last for about a week. Maybe a week and a half. And so they spend all their money, their EBT money, on these groceries, and it's not even making it through the month. And so the one thing, some of the challenges that we had is that teaching them how to shop the perimeter. And most of us know, and then when to shop. So most of us know about the perimeter, getting your fruits and vegetables, your meats, and then showing them how that they can make 30-minute meals and prepare and maybe cook on Sunday so they can freeze food and have it prepared for them for the rest of the week. So these are some of the events. So this is actually some of the parents participating with the kids doing the My Little World curriculum, because the parents should be aware of the curriculum and they should do some lessons with the kids at home. So this is some of them. We had healthcare professionals. We had one parent who came to the event. It was actually a grandmother, because we had grandmothers there too, because we have to understand that, you know, from a lot of our histories, you got your mama, your grandmama, your cousins, your auntie, a whole bunch of extended family was going to come to these events, just not the mom and the kids. And so we had a grandmother come, and she got her blood tested. Her blood pressure tested. They were like, you need to immediately go to the hospital. It was people who we had to call the, we were like, no, we need to call an ambulance because you can have a heart attack right now. Like, there was people who came to these events, got tested, and got their blood pressure read, shook all this stuff done, because we had doctors on site, we had different people there just to talk to them, because a lot of people hadn't seen the doctor in years. That's another thing that we need to talk about. A lot of people are not getting that yearly physical that they need to get. And so here's like a chef working with kids. If you have a 10, 12-year-old, and I know I used to help my mama cook, they can help prep some food before you get home. So that was the thing. She was teaching them how you could cook. You could cook meals, and this is some of the things you could do. And see, you can see two of our parents down there. We had Iron Chef competitions. We had a whole bunch of different activity for the parents up there. That was actually one of our affiliate presidents. We had some of the congressmen come in. We actually had congressmen who used to be overweight who came in to talk about their stories in Philadelphia. So it was really good. Those were some of the really great things that happened. And that's the more about the cultural competency improvement tool. And so I'm trying to go fast so the tie can go. But those are some of the things that we really got to do. And if anybody has any questions, you guys can ask me at the end about how we're doing. Thank you, guys.
I can up down there. I can just put it up here when we're ready. Good morning. Good morning. How are you? I am Natai Wright. I am the program manager for SHIRE. SHIRE is the Summit Health Institute for Research and Education. The program that I manage is entitled SCOOP, and that is the Summit Health Institute for Research and Education, Childhood Overweight and Obesity Prevention Collaborative. Ooh, all right, that's a lot. What I'm going to do today is share with you some of the successes we've had. SHIRE has for approximately 20 years worked in the District of Columbia to alleviate health disparities. Two of the hardest hit wards in the district are Ward 8 and Ward 7. They have the highest rates of childhood obesity, the highest rates of hypertension, the highest rates of every kind of ailment you can think of. We have it in Ward 7 and Ward 8. SHIRE has worked diligently to work with the community, and SCOOP is actually a community decision. We have a collaborative, and that collaborative is comprised of 140 individuals. They are individuals that are doctors. They are business owners. They're community members. They're mommies and they're daddies. They're individuals who have a vested interest in their own health and the health of their children. So we talk to the community about what is the biggest challenge that you have. And the community spoke and they said, we're concerned about childhood obesity. We heard a lot earlier about all of the ramifications of obesity as we get older, everything from the military to the Coast Guard to obesity in hospital beds. And the way that we'd like to encourage our community members to start is with children. If you start with the youngest, then you can prepare them for life skills of healthy living. So we decided that we would, these are some of the barriers to obesity today, and you know that. Children eat more and they move less. What is this? Video games. So we have some champion thumb developers, but we have not a lot of skippers and runners and bike riders. Children are eating unhealthy foods. It's not just McDonald's. Some parents are really uneducated on how to cook a healthy meal without a lot of butter, without a lot of oil. A lot of parents don't know you can't boil the vegetables until they are mush. All of the nutrients are gone. Then we have families that have limited access to healthy food and limited spaces for physical activity. In the district, there are a lot of areas where when children come home in the evenings, they can't run outside and play. They can't rip and run. They can't ride their bike on Saturdays because on Saturdays, someone might be out selling drugs. Some of the playgrounds, they found hypodermic needles on them. They found condoms on them. So it's a little difficult for a child just to run outside the front door and play in an environment where it's not healthy. Parlene mentioned I'm Learning just a little bit, and that is the program that the collaborative selected to implement. We looked at a couple of programs, and I'm Learning was the most comprehensive and provided the wider spectrum of educational options for teachers and parents and children. So with I'm Learning, our goal is to increase the quantity of time spent in physical activity. As Dr. Yolandra mentioned, we certainly want to have the children achieving 60 minutes of movement each and every day. We want to improve the quality of structured movement. So it's not running in the playground and flailing around randomly. It's learning how to hop and skip and jump and understanding the benefits of those movements and being able to describe what the movement is. When a child reaches kindergarten and first grade, they should be able to tell you, I can hop, and a hop is a blast off of one foot and landing on the same foot. They should know those things. So it's not just ripping and running, it's understanding what you are doing. Finally, we want to improve the healthy nutrition choices for children every day. So we decided that the best way to do this was through child care centers. Where are children 9 hours a day? They're in school. I teach early care educators that there's mommy, there's daddy, there's grandma, and there's you. Teachers teach children to hop, skip, jump, say please, say thank you, share. So that's an awesome place to teach children to move every day. What we were able to do, and this is really an awesome blessing for me, I directed a child care center years and years and years and years ago, and my challenge was that I had children coming in, the parents would come in and the parents would say, well, Tyrone won't, he won't learn his ABCs. He won't learn his 1, 2, 3s. And I thought, okay, well, he's in here every day, so what are we doing? Well, Tyrone came in one day and he sang the nasty song. He sang the nasty song all day. He remembered every lyric. He remembered the rhythmic pattern. So obviously Tyrone could learn. So what was the problem? The problem was the children would come in, and a lot of times they'd come in cars, and the cars blasting the music. And who remembers an old gospel songs from a long time ago? They're very different than the ones today. Mm-hmm. So when I arrived at Howard University, every morning at 6 o'clock, I would hear, I'm climbing up on the rough side. You know that song? Of the mountain. Now you have Mary Mary. and you have, who's the, Kirk Franklin, and they're rocking it out. Things are really different now. Country music is very different now. So what I decided to do was to take the entire preschool curriculum and set it to music. Now, my goal at that time was to engage children in activities so they're moving, because three-year-olds can't keep still. They're not wired to keep still. So when you tell a child, sit still, be quiet, that's impossible. They can't do that. So we had to find a way to challenge all that energy. So my goal was to have the children moving, learning, and to tire them out so they take a nap. Very honestly. So what I'd like for you to do, so they come in the morning and they're in this car full of music. And can I set that up? I'm going to let you do our good morning song. We'll do it together because you've been sitting for a while now. So let's move a little bit. Everybody up. Yeah, just put it on the first one. Just turn it on.
Is it on?
There you go. All right. So in the morning, the children come in, and I'm just working with toddlers, so please forgive me. So they come in, and they come in a car where the music is blasting. You know the cars. And the window's up, it's wintertime. They come in, and they come to the front door, and so they step out of the car, and you gather them all up in a circle, and you sit them down, and you sing, A, B, C, D, E. Are they going to listen? No, because they came in this. So this is our good morning song. I'm going to teach it to you. Everybody, be a partner. You're going to shake hands. The music is designed. The music. Don't shake hands. Yeah. The music is designed for the children to move for the whole song. There's about 50 minutes of movement on the CD. So what the children. So the music is going to get you moving as soon as you hear it. The movements are: good morning to you. Are you today? Swing your hands up. That's your first exercise. Then switch hands. Good morning to you. I just want to say good morning. Now, let's see you make the sun. Very good. Lay out your horizon. You're going to do another stretching move. Good morning. Leg burst. Good morning. Switch hands. Good morning. Now show me your sleepy eyes. Now we're going to do our good movement. We're going to bend over. Your sleepy eyes, what do? They open wide. And then, since they just got there, come on in and start your day. Oh, that's a big one on that. Okay. That's a big one. All right, you ready? Okay, now go on. But this is how we incorporate movement. You can try this a little bit. Okay, that's the first one. That's not the first one. Is that it?
Yeah, it's the first one.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You guys can't hear.
Good morning to you. How are you today? Good morning to you. I just want to say good morning. Good morning. Sleepy eyes open wide. Come on in. Start your day. Good morning to you. How are you today? Good morning to you. I just want to say good morning. Good morning. Good morning to you. How are you today? Good morning to you. We all want to say good morning. Good morning. Sleepy eyes open wide. So, by virtue of the fact that I solicited all the jazz musicians I work with, it was culturally competent. We, of course, as I said, decided that early care environments are the optimal place to engage children. They're there all day. So from the time they arrive until the time they leave, in bursts of 10, we encouraged early care educators to incorporate My Little World in the course of their day. That was the first half of... Uh-oh, did I turn it off? Oh, Lord. That was the first half of our Scoop program. So My Little World is culturally and musically appealing to the ethnically diverse children and families of today's society. I say that because it's not just hip-hop, it's not just jazz, it's all styles of music that are represented in an inner-city environment. It captures attention and encourages movement. Most of the children, I have to instruct the teachers to practice the movements before they let the children hear the music, because when they hear the music, they just begin to jump up and down. All right. It addresses the factors that contribute to childhood obesity, because if you can engage your children in 60 minutes of quality movement every day, then you're automatically beginning to move your children around. And, of course, early care educators achieve 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous. Some of the songs are really, really vigorous, and some of the songs are moderately vigorous. All right. The second half of our program is the Fit Family Saturday Patty Cake Nutrition Celebrations. Long title. What we do is we're actually able to engage mommies and daddies and grandmommies and granddaddies and uncles and aunts in 5 hours of educational content on a Saturday morning. So you know we must be doing a lot to keep them there all day. What we're able to do is we advertise it, or the program goals. We improve the quality of food served to families. Engage program participants in movement and nutrition activities that demonstrate healthy behavior. So they don't just come and listen. They're participating during the whole 5 hours. We utilize education and training materials that change attitudes and behaviors in the home environment. We use a lot of tangible materials, bright materials, things you can stick on the refrigerator, stick on your desk, put in the child's room. So it's not a bunch of white paper with black writing. Okay, so we provide families with tangible materials. They get the CDs, books, recipes, and we increase the movement and experiences of the home environment. So we teach the parents how to involve My Little World in the home environment. All right, this is our flyer. So what we're able to do with our parents is, first of all, free nutrition education. Okay, we start at 10 o'clock in the morning. They're going to plant a garden. We tell them everything they're going to do. One of the key things you'll see on here is participating. Well, what is it? What is it? Where is it? Where? We spend the day enjoying yourself while your children are learning as well. We provide activities for the children so the parents can bring their children and have a ready-made babysitter. Okay. All right. This is our cooking class. Parents cook. They chop. We have a daddy who came up and cooked a baby. These are grandparents that are practicing. This is our brain class. They're practicing for the competitions for the brain class. All right. These are some samples of the placemats that the children made for healthy cooking, healthy living every day. This is the gardening class that we have. And these are the results. In 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 patty cake parties, we were able to educate 483 people. Wow. So we're really happy about the program, and we've been very, very successful. So if you have any questions, I know I went very fast, but I hope, did I make sense? Did it make sense? Did you get it? All right. Thank you very much.